talking about. It's the opposite of what she was talking about. So I want to talk a little bit today about anger, about resentment, about envy, about jealousy, about these states of mind and heart that are familiar to all of us, that are the biggest obstructions to metta, the far enemy, as it's said in the texts of metta. The Buddha has a description for anger that I really like. He says, it's got a poisonous root, but a honeyed tip. You know, so the part that we see is so alluring and seems so sweet. But of course, the root of it is poisonous. And all of us know it, everybody. Even people who say, I don't get angry. Maybe not outside. And the Buddha had, there's a really very nice little sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya called The Four Kinds of Vipers. Now, I happen to like snakes a lot, so I immediately saw that and went, ooh, I wonder what that's about. It's about anger and angry people and the different ways anger manifests in people. So there are people who are slow to strike, slow to bite, and not venomous. There are people who are quick to strike and not venomous. There are people slow to strike and venomous, and quick to strike and venomous. So basically, this is a continuum with two axes on it for how we rest in this angry place. We might take a long time to get angry. It may take a lot to make us angry. These are people who are slow to strike, or snakes who are slow to strike. It takes a lot to provoke anger in some people. Venomous, well, do we act on it and speak from that place or not? So obviously one wants to be slow to strike and not venomous. You know, the anger doesn't stick around. It doesn't get acted out. And one doesn't want to be quick to strike and venomous. But some of us are. It's just the way we're conditioned. So I find this really helpful to know, where am I on this little, you know, scatter diagram? And I think actually I'm slow to strike and venomous. Because when I get angry, then I'm the sort of person that hangs on to it for a long time. Doesn't want to let it go. Keeps bringing it up. And it can come out in passive-aggressive ways in people. So it might not be overt venom, especially if we're conditioned not to be angry. And so just knowing yourself and putting yourself in one of these little categories, it actually, I find it really helpful in making it less personal. This is just how we're conditioned. And watching how anger plays out in the mind and in the body is a practice. You know, just observe it. How do we manifest it? And basically all anger has roots, of course, in craving. It manifests, it's the, you know, the manifestation of the flip side of that coin as dosa. But maybe we think we deserve something and somebody else has it or got it. For example, somebody got the promotion we thought we deserved or the job we thought we deserved. We didn't. Or the partner we thought we deserved, and we didn't. Or we want things to be a certain way and people are disappointing us. Or we want a certain outcome and somebody's standing in our way. You know, the root of a lot of anger is craving. Another root of anger to watch for is fear. And that can be the kind of anger that flashes up just in the middle of we're doing something and something happens that scares us. And we, instead of feeling the fear, we react out of anger. The first time I really noticed this in my own mind and body was one time I was driving in a car that did not belong to me. This was in Massachusetts, and I was driving from retreat center where I worked down to a little shop where I was going to buy something for the kitchen. And I came into the little town near where the retreat center was, and there was this strange intersection at the middle of town with like four different roads meeting at different angles. Five, actually. It was just funny little. And somebody turned out right in front of me, and I nearly hit him. And the first thing that happened were words came out of my mouth that I can't repeat here because they weren't polite. And I did something with my hand involving one finger. And it surprised me because I hadn't had this experience in a while. And it's like, wow, where did that come from? And I realized I was freaked out. It's like, wow, I was really scared. And what came out was this blast of anger. So notice the roots of anger, whether it's craving or fear. And notice how it manifests in associated mind and heart states, like envy, jealousy, resentment. Anger isn't very closely related to these states and often comes together with it. And resentment, it's really that long smoldering anger that comes when we nurture it over and over again about something that's, you know, somebody has that we don't think they deserve, or somebody's done something and we just can't let it go. That's, you know, the manifestation of that honeyed tip. We keep sucking on it and getting more and more and more poisoned by it. Stoking anger in the form of resentment, envy, jealousy. And in practice, this metta practice, practically, of course, it's going to arise. That's a sign the practice is working when we see obstructions. And especially moving into these categories coming, difficult people, enemies. These, of course, bring up all sorts of things. And what to do? By now, because we've said a lot, by now you know that attitude is really important. Facing it, feeling it, dropping into the visceral experience of it, without making it a problem. And this is very easy to say, but we just want to get rid of it. So it's hard to do. And really, really being vigilant about thought is so important with anger. I had an experience, many experiences actually, on a long retreat that I was having. And this is several long retreats, actually, because it played out over the course of about 2 years. Somebody got a job that I wanted and thought I deserved. And I had judgments about this person that were not, in retrospect, well, you know, I don't feel very proud of myself, but It wasn't my best moment, let's put it that way. I just had a lot of judgments about them as being a lightweight and yada, yada, yada. They were actually the perfect fit for the job, and I wouldn't have been. But that aside, I really thought I deserved that job. And every time I went on retreat, even if I thought, oh, I was over it, immediately, this would come up. And I would go for days dwelling in rage. And it was because I was feeding it with these thoughts about how they were, how I was, how unfair it was. And really, it was just a big mess of envy, jealousy, ego, clinging. But, you know, it's so hard. And I was practicing really hard with this, you know, going to the feeling, connecting with it. But I was connecting with the anger. I wasn't connecting. I didn't want to admit to myself that all these other associated states were so strong, especially envy. It's not something that we want to really connect with. It's like, oh, envy me? No, I don't do that. I'm right after all, you know? So really looking to see what's feeding the papancha, what's feeding the you know, whirlwinds of thought, what's keeping this anger alive. The Buddha says and recommends that we reflect on the dangers of anger is one of the first things to do in working with it. And this can be a bit of a struggle for us because we live in an angry culture. More and more, actually, especially if you're living in the United States right now. But we live in an angry culture where it's okay to say things and do things from a place of anger. Maybe it's a joke or something, but it's still hate speech. I heard this very interesting talk about how Facebook moderates its posts. And in trying to figure out how to do this on a global level, they were having all these meetings all over the world with these test cases that people would run through. You know, should we take this post and block it or not? And they were finding a huge difference in different parts of the world in terms of whether something was acceptable or not. And one of them, it blew me away because my very first reaction was block it. There was a post that was a joke saying, kill all men, you know, with a cute little picture of a little girl. And it was a ha 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 joke from somebody in New York. And the New Yorkers that they interviewed, you know, that were actually doing this talk, they thought, oh yeah, that's funny. We should leave it up. Freedom of speech and all that. And I'm like, leave it up? That's crazy. It's not even funny. And, you know, so our culture, parts of our culture think, oh, it's okay to say kill all men, even as a joke. But really, no. Anger's dangerous, no matter how we express it, even if it's passive-aggressive, or even not passive-aggressive at all, even if it's, you know, a joke that's meant to be funny and not meant to be serious. Anger's not our friend. That kind of speech is not our friend. And again, in the Anguttara, the Buddha runs through a series of dangers. The first being, we become displeasing and disagreeable to many people. Nobody wants to be around us when we're angry, no matter how right we are. You know, it's like everybody gives us a wide berth. And we live, the second is we live with an abundance of enmity. goes without saying. And that's never fun. We live with an abundance of faults. That's also never fun. If we die in a place of anger, we die confused, which of course is the opposite of what happens if we die with a mind full of metta. And then we're reborn in a plane of misery or a bad destination. And, you know, you can read these and go, But there's another way he talks about the dangers of anger that to me really goes in a lot more sharply and really brings it to light in a humorous way. Because he says, when we dwell in anger, we give our enemy what they want. So if we're angry at somebody who's harmed us, we give them what they want. First of all, our enemy wants us to be ugly, and when we're angry we are, he says. Secondly, our enemy doesn't want us to rest, and we can't sleep. He doesn't want us to be successful, and so we are unsuccessful. Infamous, he doesn't want us to be famous, and we become infamous. And we have no friends. So our enemy gets what they want, and we get this miserable state where nobody wants to be near us. We're not successful. We have an ugly face that everybody sees. You know, a metta face is so clear and obvious. An angry face? Oh man, it's like give that person a really wide berth. We don't want to be around them. And never mind the next rebirth, the next moment. Even in this life, anger, of course, doesn't go anywhere good. And it just helps to remember that simple fact. I'm sure you've all heard the pithy phrase, anger is drinking poison and wishing your enemy dies. It hurts us, not the other person. And it's offset by patience. And so when the Buddha says, well, what do you do about it? The first thing he says is, after, you know, reflecting on the dangers of anger, he says, to reflect about, well, this has happened. But what can be done about it? In other words, there's nothing that can be done to undo what has happened, what has arisen. They did this to me, but what can be done about it? Now what is the next question, of course. And the first thing the Buddha says to do in that case is to develop metta. The second is to develop compassion. The third is to develop equanimity. The fourth is to pay no attention to what is making us angry. And this is why cultivating metta, karuna, and upekkha are very helpful, because we're guiding the mind away from that again and again. And then just to reflect about ownership of action. What future do we want to make for ourselves? A miserable one or a happy one? No, so patience when provoked is so important. And I want to close with a lovely story. The Buddha had people in his life who he triggered clearly. and who didn't treat him nicely. And it's always interesting to see what he did with these people. And in one case, he's faced with a Brahmin who's obviously threatened by him and responds by abuse, by just abusing him with speech and action. And the Buddha, in the middle of this tirade, the Buddha says, "Brahmin, do you ever have guests in your house?" And the Brahmin is surprised by this turn of subject and says, yes. And then the Buddha asks, "Do you feed them, you know, sweetmeats or food?" And the Brahmin says, "Of course I do." And then the Buddha says, "Well, if they don't eat that food, who does it belong to?" And the Brahmin says, "Well, me, of course." And the Buddha says, "In the same way, Brahmin, I do not eat your anger. That belongs to you." So when faced with provocation, always going to metta. So this is very helpful in this category coming up. When we've been provoked by speech or action, don't take that anger. Don't eat that anger that somebody is sending your way. And incline the heart and mind to metta. And, you know, and I'm sure everybody here has had this wonderful experience of being in that really, really small, miserable space. The prison, really, of being caught in resentment and anger and envy about something that somebody's done. And when the bubble bursts, feeling how much bigger the world is. And the thing about the world, even though our culture doesn't want to admit this, is there's space for all of us. It's not a zero-sum game. Just because somebody got that job that I wanted, I'm actually a lot happier than if I were now stuck in that job. That would have been a very different life. You know, so it works out in the end. We do something else. And yes, people do things that are harmful to us. And not to minimize the harm, but not to maximize it either, not to dwell on it either, not to feed it, not to cultivate it. We don't need to be angry to change the world. We can be outraged by some wrong that somebody's done without being angry. We can be appalled by some wrong that somebody's done without being angry. It's just knowing, oh, that's really unwholesome. Kamasaka, that expression that we have in the chant, kamasaka, means ownership of action. And that I find very, very helpful. So when somebody does or says something, or when we say or do something that comes from a place of anger, remembering just simply kamasaka, ownership of action. That works both on both parties. It's like they're doing something I think is really, but it's their karma. They're creating their karma. And what karma do I want to create? If I remember to do that, speech and action is much more useful and wholesome. Of course, I don't always, but it's very helpful. So I went a little over, but it kind of slides into the category we begin today. And before we begin to sit reflecting for a moment on who to choose in this category, the category we begin with today is not the enemy, somebody who's harmed us, but the difficult person. It's a milder version of somebody who we might not have an easy relationship with. The difficult person, somebody who we may not like for some reason, mild, not liking. Maybe we don't like the clothes they wear. We don't approve of the language they use. We don't like how they walk. If we were in a residential retreat together, there's a huge field of opportunity for this category, because we don't like the socks people wear. We don't like how they breathe. We don't like how they walk. They don't like how they sit. They move too much, you know. So mild little annoyances that other people have are good places to begin. We, as always, beginning where it's easy. So when you're reflecting on who to take for this category today, take an easy, difficult person. This category is easily separated into somebody we don't like, so that the dosa, the ill will, is going out rather than coming at us. They might be totally innocent, not doing anything wrong to us, but we don't like them. And choosing somebody the dislike is not strong. So, you know, not choosing that world figure who fills us with disgust. Not choosing people who are doing terrible things in the world right now. If it's too big for us, just don't go there. Go to somebody who has a mildly annoying tick that you don't like. Some mildly annoying behavior you don't like. Or maybe you just don't like that they dye their hair purple or something. I don't know. So that first category, the people who we don't like, the dosa is going out. The enemy is somebody who has harmed us in some way. Speech or action. So in this category, it's really important to remember to start easy. Just like the whole practice, but particularly in this category. So don't choose somebody right immediately who you're having a conflict with that you really want to resolve. And one group of people here that fit this, that are harder than you might think, are neighbors. So if you have a neighbor that you're having trouble with, don't choose them right off the bat, right at first. This is a very close and sometimes difficult relationship with a neighbor. So if you have a conflict with a neighbor, maybe don't choose that person right away. But choose somebody easy. And we'll do the practice as we have done, starting with a different category, somewhere where the metta is particularly easy, and go into the difficult category. So that's just a heads up to say where we're going with this. So please make yourself comfortable. Very comfortable, particularly for this category. And really taking a moment to connect with the heart, connect with the body, connect with yourself kindly. Giving yourself that metta hug as you sit down and get comfortable. And picking up the formal metta practice where it is especially easy for you. Choosing whichever person or being that is most reliable for you in terms of being able to connect with the metta, with the heart, with the well-wishing, and with this tender care. And we'll Stay with this person for about 5 minutes. If you notice your mind spinning on who will I choose, who will I choose, just let that thought float through. Say to yourself later, somebody will come to mind. Don't worry. And come back to this easy category of being. Connecting with the heart of metta and planting those seeds of kindness over and over and over again. Letting the metta soak the heart like a sponge. Now closing with this person. And taking that moment to connect with the common humanity, just as I want to be happy. So may beings I dislike be happy. And choosing this easy, difficult person, letting it be okay if it's something really quite trivial, it's a good place to start. Bringing them to heart and mind and remembering this common humanity. Just as my benefactor wants to be happy, so may you be happy. You also want to be happy. Really taking the time to breathe into the heart center and really feel what we're feeling. Bringing this person to mind and then repeating our phrase for them. Letting that resonate for a moment and then again connecting with the heart. Connecting with this disliked person. And repeating the phrase. With this category, there's no rush. Don't worry if you feel nothing or you feel the opposite of metta. Just keep going. Letting whatever responses are arising in the heart and mind be there, but inclining to metta, inclining to this well-wishing anyway, or no matter what. And as with the other categories, if at some point you just hit a wall with this, you can always go back to where it's easy. Staying there until the metta is established again and switching back. Please don't be concerned if it's a little bumpy. It might be, it might not be, but it might be. Doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. Just keep going. If you encounter just some resistance or mild difficulty, just keep going. Keep planting these seeds of kindness. with this category as many times as you need to, beginning again if the mind has wandered or is stuck in thoughts about this person or ourselves. You can say thank you for sharing and begin the metta phrase again, inclining the heart again and again and again to kindness. Coming to a close with this person. When you're ready, opening your eyes. Resting in metta as you adjust your posture. Stretch. Move into general activities. So, for the next 24 hours, of course, in the formal sitting, the formal walking, staying with this disliked person. And with this category, it's very, very useful to start gently. So beginning with where it's easy in the sitting and in the walking, whether yourself or a benefactor or a dear friend, and maybe then going to a second benefactor or dear friend, you know, going to a second easy person. Walking into the water of metta gently and slowly rather than diving into the deep end with it. And as always, if you encounter really serious, not just mechanical phrases, not being able to connect, but really you find the mind is really getting reactive, it's not a failure to go to another category, to where it's easier. You've just found your edge, that's all. It's okay. So to encourage you to encounter that edge and you know, feel completely free to go to where it's easy for a while until things balance out. And as before in the general activities, going to yourself or all beings in that more open, formless practice where we respond to whom we're with or who we encounter with metta. Thank you, everybody, for your practice. Thank you for making the world a less hateful place right now. We're definitely swimming against the stream with this. It's really important. Thank you, everybody. May you have a wonderful day. I turn the microphone now over to Aria, who will do the questions and the chanting today.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.